south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
You know what they call a retired guy here in Latin America, don't you? Jubilado. It starts with the letters J-U-B. The root word for that is jubil or jubilation, meaning extreme happiness, jubilation. The problem is so many retired people up by you and here south of the border aren't so very happy at all. Of course, the ones that have a hobby or two are quite happy indeed. And the ones that continue working in some capacity are very happy too. By the way, Netflix, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram are not hobbies. Don't fool yourself. They're mind-numbing sinkholes. Oh, and sports is a hobby if you're actually doing it yourself. You're playing. But if all you do is sit around, eat junk food, drink beer, and scroll through the sports channels, that's not a hobby. That'll suck the life out of your brain like social media does. Oh, and gringos and expats who are retired by definition, who don't have hobbies, often end up in paradise celebrating the sunrise with a case of beer and watching the sunset over an empty one. Hey, don't laugh. I know lots of people like that. You see that a lot, especially with people whose dream is to retire on or near the beach. So, all you going to be in wannabe jubilados out there, take note. You know, over the years, I've had the opportunity to talk to lots of gringos and expats who have retired here in Latin America. It's the ones that sit around lounging all day and don't have any hobbies that seem the least happy in their little version of paradise. Funny thing, just like getting ready to go on a big trip, sometimes the anticipation is a lot more fun than the actual trip. Same thing goes for retirement, especially if you haven't got anything to do once you get there. In fact, I remember a long time ago when I was still up in Chicago, my mother, being that she's always been a teacher, a professor, therefore there were lots of teachers and professors hanging around all the time. I'd see them at the house, at dinners, at events, and many, many of them were counting down the days and the years to their retirement. Looking ahead towards retirement seems to have been most teachers' national pastime. Even back then, when teachers were able to discipline bad kids and not get canceled, when teachers actually had control over their classrooms. Back then, the word canceled had a completely different definition, like a canceled check. I remember, and it was more than 30 years ago, I'd hear lots and lots of retirement countdown stories at those get-togethers. I've only got 8 or 5 or 4 more years or 16 months. Even back then, it was kind of sad knowing that all those teachers wanted to get the hell out. They hated their jobs. Imagine what they feel like now, 30-something years later, now that they've lost what little autonomy and control that they had. Well, that's the subject of an email I just got from a longtime listener, Lenny. He says, Johnny, I for one, as a university professor, can't wait to get the hell out of here. It wasn't so great in the 80s and 90s, especially when they started bringing in the metal detectors. That, to me, signaled the beginning of the end. Believe it or not, Johnny, even we, the professors and the teachers, have to pass through the metal detectors. As if we're going to bring in the Glocks and the AK-47s. Though I can assure you, us teachers and professors do get rattled enough to seriously toy with the idea. But now, in the 21st century, it's completely out of control, especially since the iPhone came around. Now, us teachers and professors have to get up and do a song and dance and hope that we're interesting enough that our students aren't looking at their phones every 30 seconds, instead of every 3 or 4 minutes, as usual. In the old days, from 2000 to 2010, we could take the phones away from the kids. That was allowed. It was a distraction. But we can't do that anymore because the phone is their life and they do their studies and research on their phone these days, or at least they pretend to do so. Johnny, as teachers and professors have lost the battle, we're competing with these digital drugs and it's clearly completely out of control. We lost that war already. If you ask yourself, does all this technology, new iPhones coming out every year, with a million apps, does that make people happy? Nope. Does it help make kids smarter, more attentive? Absolutely not. Kids are more wired, stressed, and depressed than ever. In fact, my university has not one or two, but 3 student psychologists. They're booked all the time, too. According to them, every kid's got low self-esteem. It's got a psychological problem, and I believe they do. People just aren't happy. And sometimes I wonder if they prefer being unhappy, because if you take their cell phones away from them, they freak out even more. On that subject, did you know there's a new lifestyle fad emerging from California? Where else? Silicon Valley. It's called dopamine fasting, which involves cutting yourself off from almost all stimulation for 24 hours. Of course, that means cell phones and social media, the toughest addiction of all. Why'd that come about? Because people are so overloaded by media and distractions and the constant dopamine hits from likes on social media. Eventually, people become numb to it. In fact, there's a new media disease called anhedonia, defined as inability to feel pleasure. Psychologists are talking a lot about it these days because it's so prevalent in people who have social media overload. Anyway, Johnny, as for me, I've got one more year to cash out with my retirement. I am getting out of Dodge completely. I don't know exactly where, but I know when, in 1 year. Then I'll do a little tour through Central America and see where I want to settle. Keep up the good work, Johnny. I've been listening since 2016. Signed, The Professor. P.S. Johnny, being that there are actual talks in my school about reparations for slavery, I'd like to chime in on that for a second. Not to be too controversial here, but I'm thinking, why don't we start by allowing people who are actually enslaved today, yes, I said today, now, to sue human traffickers that are trading them and exploiting them right now, here in the 21st century. But where are these people who are being bought and sold in the present day? People just don't like to hear this stuff because it doesn't involve evil white men and white privilege. But here it goes. There's the big three: Africa, Middle Eastern Muslim countries, and China. Oh boy, Johnny, you're going to get in trouble if you mention this on your show. It's understandable if you bleep this part out. One could get in trouble telling the truth these days. You risk getting canceled, fired, even stoned, in the Old Testament sense, with rocks, not dope. The truth, again, is modern-day slavery does exist. Where? Africa, the Muslim Middle East, and China. But it rarely gets reported because it's got nothing to do with toxic white man privilege or white supremacy. All right, that comes from Lenny the Professor. Good luck with that upcoming retirement there, Lenny. I hope you've got a few hobbies. And as to whether me or my show gets canceled or not, well, I've certainly got my share of haters out there, so time will tell. Oh, and one more thing, Len. In the first world news feeds, you always read about the terrible crime and all the killings here in Latin America. Yet, I don't think of all the tens of thousands of schools here in Latin America, there's a single one that's got metal detectors. Nor has there ever been one single school shooting. What do you make of that? All right, now a little comment about what I've been seeing pop up all over big Latin American cities these days. Designated bike lanes. You know what I'm talking about. Good idea, right? Give bicyclists their own lane. Because after all, they're the most vulnerable. They get hit by a car and it's all over. Anyway, throughout Latin American big cities, street crews are out all over the place, painting lines on heavily traveled roads in almost exclusively upscale neighborhoods, giving bike riders their own safe path. Problem is, in Latin America, you rarely see a single bike rider. You gotta wonder, with all the missing and stolen manhole covers, and all the dickhead drivers with all the burnt-out taillights and headlights on their cars, what kind of idiot bureaucrats are setting the priorities? Surely they're not spending local government money on it. It's some kind of grant or foundation. You know the drill. Do-gooder, feel-good NGOs spreading their money around. It's another gringo copycat thing that's turned into a complete disaster. About those designated lanes. They're supposed to be exclusively for bicyclists, right? I mean, they got little bikes stenciled on them every 10 or 20 feet. Some are even partitioned off with cement posts and pylons, so cars don't swerve in or hog the lane. Good idea, right? Well, this is Latin America, where good ideas turn useless, often even before the project gets started. First of all, it's very rare to see anyone riding a bicycle in a big city. Only on weekends in high-end neighborhoods, it seems, do you ever see a bicycle. And then, more often than not, there's a bodyguard in an SUV tagging along 20 feet behind. Same thing with joggers. You rarely see them anywhere but in upscale neighborhoods on weekends. Sometimes in little groups or packs, also being tagged from behind by an SUV full of bodyguards. And when you're driving through an upscale neighborhood on a Sunday morning and you see a bicyclist or jogger, they're wearing all the right brand name iridescent clothes and paraphernalia. It's all about the show, right? I mean, what kind of health benefit can you get from jogging or biking a half hour once a week? I guess it's better than nothing, but you have to know deep down, they're just putting on the dog for the neighbors. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not against having separate little bike paths and jogging trails. That's great. Problem is, as soon as they create those things and designate them exclusively for bikes, because there are no bikes and a vacuum always gets filled, the motorcycles, the cucarachas of the roads take over. Every time you see an exclusive jogging or bike path, it gets taken over by moron motorcyclists, often going the wrong way against traffic on that road. That means if there was a bicyclist on that intended road, he'd be risking a head-on collision. And nobody does a single thing about it. The cops could be standing right there, and they don't even give a motorcyclist breaking the law a second look, even if he's going the wrong way down a one-way. Just like dickhead motorcyclists don't care when they run red lights. They do it all the time, right in front of transit cops, too. The cops don't even bat an eye. However, if you or I were to run a red light in front of a transit cop, with a car, I mean, not a motorcycle, if he couldn't flag you down and you kept right on going, at least he'd make an effort to get your plate. Then there is a chance when you renew your license at the end of the year, there'll be a fine attached that you have to pay before they'll renew your plate. Now remember, things are different here in Latin America regarding car license plates and your own personal driver's license. In most Latin countries, you see, the ticket does not go to the driver. It goes to the owner of the car. Let's say, for example, you made an illegal U-turn. The cop happens to pull you over because he's standing right there, or a group of them are standing right there. There are various traps like that in big cities because they know that's a particularly common place for people to make illegal U-turns. There are dozens of U-turn traps like that in every big city. Oh, and Latin American cities also have a huge problem with repetitive one-way roads, too. Yet more proof, they've just got some unbelievably bad or unqualified or underqualified civil engineers and road designers. For example, in Guatemala City, it's a pretty big city, 2 million people or so, they've got a place in a decent area called Zone 9, where there are 4 one-way streets going the very same way, all contiguous and parallel to each other. In other words, if you're driving down a main boulevard and you want to take a left, you can, because it's a one-way street. If you turn, you can only turn right. So you go to the next corner. Another one-way street, and you can't turn left, only right. Go to the next corner to try to turn left. You can't because it's a one-way street. You can only turn right. So you pull up to the next corner. You can't turn left because it's another one-way street going right. Man, I can't tell you how many millions of swear words must have crossed the lips of gringos driving through Latin American cities. Every single one of us long-term gringos and expats have exploded thousands of times, wondering which idiot government dickhead is responsible for such monumental stupidity. I know why it happens and why it's so ubiquitous throughout Latin America. Take the case of Hugo Chavez. Remember Venezuela's dictator? The one that ground the Latin American country with the highest GDP into the dirt? Well, I'll tell you what he did when he got to be president. He nationalized the oil industry and kicked out everyone like BP and Chevron, Standard Oil, etc., and put all his friends, cronies, and relatives in positions they had no experience or aptitude for. Yep, he put his cronies in charge of the oil company refineries. The problem is, when a person gets voted into a high-level government job, it becomes a full employment act for your family and friends. Everybody knows that in Latin America. Of course, that happens in government up in the States, too, but there are slightly higher standards, like, for example, a college degree. Pretty much any degree. Doesn't matter if it's drama, archery, or gender studies. Once Uncle Pete becomes a congressman, your lard ass will have a do-nothing, paper-pushing job for life. Well, for Uncle Pete's life, anyway. By the way, speaking of Hugo Chavez and Maduro and the rise and fall of Venezuela, comes this email from Frederico. He says, Johnny, I'm very disappointed in what I see coming from the news media in the United States. I'm a radiologist who escaped Venezuela 2 years ago. I got out with my two brothers, one's a businessman and one's a journalist, and my mother. First, landing in Colombia, then Panama, and then on to the United States. It took us 2 years, but we were able to get visas because we're all three professionals, even my mother, who was a biology teacher. It wasn't until we got to the United States, specifically Miami, Florida, we have some blood relatives there, that we started seeing in the newspapers and in the press and hearing rumors that the Venezuelan crisis was caused not by Maduro or Chavez, but by the U.S. and its sanctions against Venezuela. I wonder, as do thousands of Venezuelan businessmen, lawyers, professionals, journalists, community leaders, etc., where the U.S. media is getting that information, that propaganda. It's as if they've never spoken to any Venezuelans who actually live there. Did you know 6 million of us Venezuelans have escaped in the last 10 years? And with Venezuelan's population of 30 million, that means one out of every five Venezuelans has escaped the country. And yet it seems not a single media source in the U.S. has interviewed any one of us. Where are they getting their information? Why are they not reporting the facts? What's their game plan? Number one, the Venezuelan crisis does not come from U.S. sanctions. Every single Venezuelan I know will swear to that. Yet that's exactly opposite of what we're hearing in the U.S. media. Yes, of course, there are U.S. sanctions, but they're far from being the cause of the crisis. What they have done, though, is put a brake on the suffering of the Venezuelan people since they help expose the criminal activities of the Maduro regime. I repeat, the serious economic and structural crisis that Venezuela is suffering right now happened very much prior to U.S. sanctions. The truth is that the crisis and unspeakable hardships and humiliations under what can be defined as continued genocide, what has caused the exodus of 6 million people, is due in the first place to economic and monetary policies implemented under the advice of other failed authoritarian allies like Cuba. You might recall when Chavez was alive, his number one ally and hero was Fidel Castro. Since then, there's been a systematic destruction of the productive apparatus of our country and of the business sector. The regime dismantled the rule of law and collapsed the legal security we once had. And now, there's unprecedented corruption. Never forget that Nicolas Maduro is an ally of Russia, Iran, Cuba, Nicaragua, and China, and of the drug cartels of Colombia, Bolivia, and Mexico, and of terrorist groups such as Hezbollah, the ELN, and FARC. In fact, Venezuela is full of active anti-Western, anti-Christian Muslim terrorist cells. With Iran having made deals with Chavez and Maduro for cash, oil, and Venezuelan passports. And as far as those U.S. sanctions, those direct efforts have exposed the fact that the regime and its officials continuously violate human rights, trade in stolen and donated food, medicine, and basic necessities, and continue to do so without the slightest bit of transparency. The saddest thing, though, is I had so much hope when I arrived in the U.S., and now I'm disillusioned with the U.S. media. They couldn't get the Venezuela situation more wrong. Signed, Lorenzo, looking for a plan C. All right, Lorenzo, thanks for that. But, you know, you're preaching to the choir here. I get the same thing from the horse's mouth almost every day. My girlfriend's Venezuelan. Escaped the country with her brother, her mother, and her stepfather. She was a businesswoman in Caracas, had three clothing stores in a big central mall. And one day, a group of military guys came in and started taping little flyers on every door and every business in that mall. They said, "Don't be alarmed, everything's fine, keep on working. It's just that we've nationalized this shopping mall. You can still work in your place of business, buy and sell, but the titles for your properties have reverted back to the state. Your stores and storefronts are the people's property now." Well, you can imagine what the owners of those businesses were feeling at that moment because, like she said, at least half of the people in that commercial center had bought their little commercial spaces. Now, she said that most of the small commercial spaces had a value of from $40,000 to maybe $80,000. And she had three that were bought and paid for, so she lost more than $150,000, and she'd worked years to clear that debt and to get those properties free and clear. And that's really big money in Latin America. She lost her life savings and couldn't do a thing about it, nor could anyone else. She said the same thing happened to at least 50 other people who own their businesses in that particular commercial center. That happened in hundreds of commercial centers all over the country. That was 3 years ago, and it took about a half a year for her to make a plan and organize her and her family's escape. By the way, she left two brothers behind in Caracas because one of them was head of the Red Cross. He was getting paid in dollars, so he was doing all right. And every day, the dollar appreciates against the bolivar. He's one of the lucky ones. The thing is, though, every time you get into a conversation with her or her family members, they get so mad when they hear people or the news media say that the U.S. and its alphabet agencies and sanctions caused it all. There are cookie-cutter news explanations of why Venezuela hit the skids, but they never interview people who had boots on the ground and actually lived through it. She says, "Why don't they interview me or my brother or my mother? We'll tell them the truth. Venezuela was on its road to destruction before the U.S. authorized a single sanction." By the way, she speaks five languages, some of them better than others, of course. But the thing that amazed me most is that she speaks Arabic. And I thought, man, I've been in Latin America 30 years and I've never met a Latino or Latino who spoke Arabic. I don't even know a single gringo who speaks Arabic. I said, did you learn it in school or something? She said, no, I learned it by osmosis because there are so many Muslims in Caracas. She said they were coming into her stores all the time and all her suppliers were Muslims too. Most all from Iran or Lebanon, that's Lebanon. You got to wonder, how'd that happen? In fact, she said there are so many Muslims in Caracas, her own brother's girlfriend is a Lebanese Muslim who rejected Muhammad. But not at first, not right away. It took a while. Now, get this. About this Muslim girl, her parents live in Lebanon, Lebanon. They allowed her to go to Caracas because her relatives live there. They owned some clothing stores and such too. But here's the thing. She got so westernized working at the clothing store, being on social media, Facebook and all that, seeing that all the girls wanted to look their best, and in the fashion industry, there was cutthroat competition and lots of girls were getting plastic surgery. Not to mention she was so many thousands of miles away from her very conservative parents. Well, to compete with the other beautiful Venezuelan Latinas, she decided to get some plastic surgery herself. The usual stuff done in that neck of the woods. Boob job and the BBL, you know, Brazilian butt lift. And that turns out to be a no-no with strict Muslims back in the home country. And you can't keep something like that a secret forever. So now, she can't go back to Lebanon under fear of, well, being stoned or whipped in the public square, whatever they do to bad little Muslim girls who adopt too many decadent Western habits. But worst of all is that she's living in sin with a non-Muslim Latino guy. So she's stuck in Caracas forever. She can never go back. By the way, I mentioned you can't keep a secret like that forever. Let me tell you, there's a big difference between the attitude ladies in the United States have about plastic surgery versus the attitude Latinas here in Latin America have about plastic surgery. It seems as if in the States, when ladies have plastic surgery, they get it all the time, but still, they'll deny it. They try to keep it a secret, though it's not so easy to do. It's something they only choose to talk about with a few close friends, especially older ladies who go under the knife. Whereas in Latin America, Latinas are very open to telling you about it. In fact, a good expat friend of mine living in Guatemala told me now for the first time he's got a Latina girlfriend. He came down with a gringo wife some years ago, and the both of them kind of grew apart. They got divorced but stayed living in Latin America. She's now with a Latino guy, and he found his Latina girl of his dreams. And he told me, Johnny, you know what? I was caught off guard a bit when we talked about some of the goals she might have in her life. She said she always wanted to get a boob job. So, naturally, he got her a boob job. I hear that story over and over again. Latinas want to get the surgery, but they haven't got the money. Now, of course, it's much cheaper here in Latin America. Probably half or even a third of what it costs in the States. For whatever you might be getting done, but still. It's way out of reach for the average Latina. It might be a half year to a year's salary. And that's why so many of them, when they finally get a boyfriend or husband who's got some dough, they go for it. And they've got absolutely no compunction about letting the world know it. For most Latinas, it's kind of a status symbol. In fact, I can't tell you how many times I've heard a Latina say to me, yo soy recién operada. It means I've been recently operated. And they crack a smile. They're really happy about it. There's no shame at all in the telling. But even before they get operated on, when they're still just dreaming about it, I've heard a number of Latinas say, as they're looking at some other hot Latina walk by, yo quiero lipo. I'd like to get some liposuction. Or quiero levanta nalgas, which means I'd like a butt lift. Now, I know how this must sound to a lot of you up in the States who've never been down here or speak no Spanish, so you don't hear those kind of conversations. Or perhaps you just might think I'm hanging around with the wrong kind of girls. But man, I'm telling you, it's a different world down here. Though I hardly think you're going to get those kind of revelations on your date night if you don't speak Spanish. That's how I get the scoop. Always in Spanish, almost never in English. Because I'll tell you, whether you're a gringo or gringa and you speak decent Spanish, you've really broken the ice. Suddenly, you're in their world. Now, as far as Latinas and their plastic surgery desires, it's not just the 20-somethings who are saying it out loud and doing it. It's the 50 and 60-year-olds, too. In fact, just about a week ago, a gringo friend of mine was talking about his new Latina girlfriend. He's around 55, she's around 40. He met her at the local gym. And she's in really good shape. She really takes care of herself. And he was on a date with her, and he was telling her how great she looked, how fantastic she was put together. He said, I don't get it. I'm a 5 or 6, and you're a 10. She gave him a funny look like she didn't quite understand. He said, you know, up in the States, I was a 5 or a 6, so I went out with 5s and 6s. I never had a girl as beautiful as you. Never. 9s and 10s I never went for. They always turned me down. I wouldn't even try. Who needs the rejection? And here's what she said. Me? A 10? You're just saying that to be nice. You know, I don't like my butt. Mis nalgas. It's on my list. Someday, she says, someday when I can afford it. Now, all that happened on the guy's second date. Oh, and the guy said to her, "What about me? I've got no butt at all. You know, most of us American guys don't have anything back there." She goes, "No me importa," which means that's not important to me. She said, "Even if a guy's got a little panza, no me importa." A panza is a belly. Now, I've had girlfriends say pretty much the same thing to me. I haven't got a belly, but I haven't got a butt either. That flat butt syndrome seems to be a Caucasian thing. Oh, and one of the things I have found out about love, romance, and sex here in Latin America in my 30 years down here is that Latinas care far less about having a studly, handsome guy than you'd think. Though I guess all adolescent and young 20-something girls would like that. Yep, American and European girls too. The handsome studly types do have a big advantage with young ladies, while the average and nerdly guys suffer the tortures of the damned. Though generally, after a lady hits her mid-20s, she does get over the narcissistic studly types when she finds out what they're really like. She's done fooling around with guys like that, unless, of course, she's gotten knocked up. Then she and the kid are stuck having to deal with the guy forever, because he is the daddy, you know. Anyway, I found out as far as Latinas, they much prefer a nice guy who doesn't lie to them, a guy who's faithful, sincere, does what he says, doesn't get drunk too often, and doesn't hit her. And believe me, there's not a lot of Latin guys out there who fit that profile. But that's the way the dating pool is. That's all the Latinas have to choose from. So here's my advice. Remember, you get what you pay for. You know, I've talked to many gonna-be and wanna-be gringo expats and new fresh green gringos who've told me during private discussions that they don't like a girl who's had plastic surgery. Somehow it rubs them the wrong way or it turns them off. Well, I'm here to tell you that especially with the girls from these particular countries, Venezuela, Colombia, Panama, Costa Rica, Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic, Argentina, Chile, and Mexico, I think you better rethink your stance a bit, because in those particular countries, plastic surgery for ladies is sort of looked upon like going to the dentist. Now, I'm not saying whether that's right or wrong. I'm just telling you how it is. Remember the name of the show, The Expat Files Living in Latin America. I'm just filling you in. And as for the countries I haven't mentioned, like Guatemala, El Salvador, Paraguay, Honduras, Uruguay, etc. Though the vast majority of girls there are not operada. It's only because they don't have the dough, and they certainly would go for it if given half the chance. I guarantee you, as for young Latinas anyway, it's on most of their bucket lists. Rich, middle class, or poor. And you'll find they're not afraid to talk about it. South
of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.